Obsessed.
Hey everyone, welcome back. I'm Ash, and this week's episode is one that is close to home for me, literally. This week's episode, the case takes part not very far from where I live here in Melbourne, in Victoria. Actually, side note, I'm actually recording this in my mum's closet in WA because we're here on holiday. But anyway, it's close to my house. So, in 2016, a Melbourne family gripped the nation and the media when they seemingly disappeared from their home and business, without notice, without struggle, and without any of their personal belongings. The Tromp family live in Sylvan, in Victoria. The family own a red currant farm and earth moving business, with all five of the family helping out. On the 29th of August 2016, Mark Tromp and his wife Jacoba, fearing for their lives and their family's safety, pile themselves and their three grown children, 29-year-old Rihanna, 25-year-old Mitchell, and 22-year-old Ella, into Ella's silver Peugeot station wagon. They bring with them nothing but the cash and the clothes on their backs and no clear plan except escape. The family leaves everything behind. Their phones, their wallets with their bank cards, their passports, everything. They even leave several other cars behind with the keys still in the ignition. The home has been left in a rush, the doors unlocked, but mostly undisturbed. Although there are neat stacks of the family's financial and business records dating back years all over the house. Police would later say it was clear that they were looking for something, but unclear as to what. About 40 minutes into the drive, Mark and Jacoba find their son Mitchell has brought his phone with him when they fled. Fearing they could be tracked with a phone in the car, they force Mitchell to ditch it from the car window as they pass the town of Warburton, about 32 kilometres from their home. By 7 a.m. the next day on August 30th, Mitchell becomes frustrated with his parents' paranoia. He doesn't understand their fear and believes they are delusional and acting irrationally. By now, the family have gone north and crossed the Victorian-New South Wales border and are in Kelso, a town in New South Wales close to Bathurst and nearly 800 kilometres from their home. Think about this. They left at some point in the afternoon, and then by 7 a.m. the next morning, Mitch is ready, I'm out. 800 kilometres they've travelled. If you're travelling the speed limit, which most of the time is about 100 k's an hour, they've been driving for 8 hours. 8 hours in the car, not knowing where you're going, I'd be out too. Mitchell leaves his mother, father, and two sisters and catches a series of trains from Kelso to Sydney and Sydney back to Melbourne. From Kelso, the remaining Tromps drive over an hour, this time turning southeast towards the Jenlin Caves. Ella, much like her brother Mitchell, believes her parents are behaving unreasonably and, out of concern for her horses they abandoned at the farm, decides to also make her way back home. Now, we don't exactly know why, but Rihanna, the eldest daughter, also leaves with Ella. The sisters somehow manage to steal a car and make their way south 180 kilometres to Goulburn in New South Wales. Worried about the mental state and welfare of their parents, the girls call the police and report them missing and endangered. It's this report that prompts the police back in Sylvan to check the farm and find it in the state I mentioned earlier. Orderly, but unusual, with everything that binds them to a modern society left behind. From here in Goulburn, Ella and Rihanna split up. Ella continues in the stolen car back to Sylvan and the farm, the most direct route taking her nearly 7 hours and over 670 kilometres according to Google Maps, where she would arrive home the same afternoon. In Goulburn, Rihanna made her way to a Caltex service station where Keith Whittaker had taken his Ford Ute to fill it up before beginning to make his way an hour south to Canberra. Rihanna climbs into the back seat of Keith's vehicle while it was unattended and gets in on the floor in the back. Her feet behind the driver's seat, she closes the door and lays down. Around 50 kilometres into his journey, Keith feels a kick in the back of his seat. He turns to discover Rihanna laying face up on his passenger floor. In a state of shock and mild panic, Keith pulls into a rest area. He asks his passenger who she is and if she's okay. He gets no response. It takes about 20 minutes of her laying on the floor before she sits up and stares off into the distance, her face a blank slate. Keith once again asks Rihanna her name and if she's okay. Once again, no response. Keith asks if she needs water or if she was injured. She says no. Dumbfounded, Keith calls the police, who arrive nearly an hour later. The entire time, Keith says Rihanna was mostly sitting and staring blankly. Once the police arrive to take Rihanna to the Goulburn Hospital, she offers Keith $50 for her trouble. Keith refuses. He's simply happy to help. Rihanna is taken to a nearby hospital. She isn't charged with anything, but she's treated for stress-related issues. The morning of August 30th, Mitchell Tromp finally arrives home. He's caught an overnight train from Sydney. As Mitchell is reunited with his sister Ella and the pair are bombarded by media, the police in New South Wales search the Jenolan Caves area for Mark and Jacoba, since that was where they were last reported to be in, but the police find nothing. Mark and Jacoba are gone. Again. The couple had taken their daughter's car, left the Jenolan area and gone south crossing the border into Victoria once again, this time stopping in the border town of Wangaratta. About 580 kilometres south, a roughly 6-hour drive. At some point in Wangaratta, Mark and Jacoba split up. Jacoba takes a series of buses and trains where she ends up in Yass, back over the border north in New South Wales, some 3.5 hours away by direct route driving, about 350 kilometres, but we don't know the exact route she took to get there. Back in Wangaratta, at about 6:30 in the evening, a couple is driving along a neighbourhood road playing Pokemon Go where they believe someone is tailgating them. The station wagon drives slow and close behind them with its headlights on. The couple pull over to let the driver pass, but they don't. Instead, they pull over too. They exit the vehicle, but leaves it running and approaches the couple. It's Mark Tromp. Mark stands in the street. He stares at the couple in their car and takes off into a nearby parkland. Later that same night, the Miller's Cottage Motel is broken into. The bed had been slept in, the bathroom used, and some discarded muesli wrappers were found on the floor. It's unconfirmed if this was definitely Mark, but it's highly suspected. September 1st, Mitchell addresses the media and appeals for information on his parents' whereabouts. He makes a statement in reference to his father saying, "He's scared that people are after him. He's not in a good state of mind." Although Mitchell can't say who his father thinks is after him, or why. That same afternoon, Jacoba is spotted wandering around the township of Yass. She is found in an agitated state and with the help of a Good Samaritan, Jacoba is presented and admitted to the hospital. She's also treated for stress. Sergeant Knight of the New South Wales Police comments on the events being one of the most bizarre things he's worked on in 30 years. September 2nd passes with no new news or sightings of Mark. Jacoba is transferred to Goulburn Hospital where Rihanna is being treated, so they can be together. An aunt of Rihanna's is by her bedside. Saturday, September 3rd, at about 6 p.m, a report is called into police of a man running aimlessly and agitated on the outskirts of Wangaratta near the airport. Mark Tromp is located by police and brought into custody. He's questioned for 5 hours on the events over the last few days, but provides no real answers. Mark undergoes a mental health assessment. He passes and is released into the custody of his brother Ken, who is also a police officer. The media waits outside the station in the middle of the night to catch a glimpse of the man who has led the nation on a wild, speculative goose chase for days, hoping to get some sort of explanation. They don't. A photo is captured of Mark in the passenger seat of his brother's car after his release. The only statement Mark makes at this time is to flip the bird at the cameras. But eventually, he does make a statement to the media. The week after his mysterious adventure came to an end, Mark meets with the press outside their home in Sylvan. The statement is ambiguous. It gives no real answers. Mark says, "In recent days, my family has been through a difficult period. We will soon be reunited and together. I hope that we will begin to make sense of our ordeal and return to a normal life. I am conscious of the burden these events have placed upon our extended family, friends, and the community resources devoted to our aid. Without reservation, I apologise for the hurt and concern caused by these events. On behalf of our family, I express our deep gratitude to the Victoria and New South Wales Police, as well as the healthcare professionals who have looked after our physical and mental well-being. More than anything, my family and I need time to recover and receive appropriate assistance, including mental health services." Theories on the cause of the family's strange adventure include the possibility of a drug-induced psychosis, that pesticides or strong chemicals used in farming caused three of the family of five to share in a delusion that made them fear for their lives and caused them to run. But many debunk that theory, that it's even possible, or why would only three of the five, who all work together and all live together, be affected? Others think that the family was running from debt collectors who were out to take collateral no matter what, but there is no reports of any financial difficulties of that seriousness, and it doesn't explain the erraticness of the route or the strange and unhinged behaviour from some of the Tromp family members. The most widely accepted theory? Of course, it's still unconfirmed, but the most accepted theory is a build-up of general life stress, a slow build-up that resulted in a folie à deux, a madness of two, or in this case, three. I think we've mentioned the madness of two on the show before, but in case you're unsure, WebMD mentions folia à pleurisies, or the madness of many, I am not French. I have never learned French, so I apologize for any of that if that was horrible and offensive to any French listeners or French speakers. It's a phenomenon of one person suffering with a mental illness or psychotic break, and those that are closest to them, like, say, a family that all live and work together in a regional town, end up sharing in the same delusions. A quote from Rihanna in an interview she did some 6 months after the incident leans into this theory. Rihanna says, "You do start thinking the same. You have a few things that build up and you can get sick from it." Although Ella and Mitchell didn't share in the seeming psychosis that took the Tromps a total of roughly 2,000 kilometres, not including their individual trips home. And this is as close to an answer that we will likely ever have, or at least the closest we have for now. Ella was charged with the theft of the vehicle that got her home from Goulburn, but due to a clause in the New South Wales Mental Health Act, the charges were dropped 6 months later. The family seemingly returned to normal life. I know this one was a short one, and I apologise for that, but like I said before, we're on a family vacation, so time was limited. And this is a case that, because it is so close to my home, literally, it's something that I've always been interested in, and the fact that we don't necessarily know why or what they were thinking, and we never really got an explanation. Something that gripped the nation for such a short amount of time, but so intensely just faded into nothing. I like this case. Like I said, I know it's shorter, but thanks for putting up with me, and it really is good to be back. This episode of Dead Obsessed was researched, written, and edited by me, Ash Rose. Come and join me on Instagram at deadobsessedpodcast or write to us at deadobsessedpod@gmail.com. I'll catch you soon and stay obsessed. Rihanna climbed back to the seat of... So fucking hot in here. She offers Keith $50 for his trouble. She offers Keith... That's not how you spell that name at all. That same afternoon, Jacoba is... What the fuck?